out there, oh, a peace is calling in the bonds of love we meet for the world anew.
Welcome to Muffin Talk.
Kia ora and welcome to Muffin Talk. This is Muffin Talk, brought to you by the initiative Titi Paunamu, Study and Joy. And today it is a cooperation with the Religious Diversity Centre, Aotearoa, New Zealand. Muffin Talk is a weekly radio program to which I invite guests to talk about their work and their passion for issues on community programs, social justice, faith and religions. My interviews are done in the studio of Planet FM or via Zoom. Today's program is a cooperation with the Religious Diversity Centre, and I've invited Nina Tu'i to a Zoom recording for our broadcast. Nina, a very warm welcome and hi to my Tour Radio program.
Kia ora, thank you very much for inviting me. It's wonderful to be with you and your listeners.
Nina Tu'i is an Aucklander who has been working in the Pacific for many years and has recently returned to Aotearoa, New Zealand. She is currently one of the three coordinators of the Office of Public Affairs of the Baha'i Faith in New Zealand. The Baha'i community has celebrated their new year last week, and they are now in their time of fasting. Nina, can you give us a little bit of a basic background of the Baha'i Faith for those listeners who are not so familiar with it?
Sure. The Baha'i Faith was founded by Baha'u'llah in the mid-1800s, 1844, in Persia, or now modern-day Iran. And essentially, the core teachings of the Baha'i Faith are around unity and the oneness of humanity. So we believe that, all humanity are connected and interconnected, and that we need to work together to eliminate all forms of prejudice, be that gender or racial prejudice, and that we are all one, that we all maybe call God different names and worship him in different ways, but we're all on a spiritual path towards God.
And the founder of the Baha'i Faith, did he have a religious background before?
Yes, of course. At that time, it was a very deeply Muslim country, as it still is in Persia. So it emerged from a Muslim context, and there was a great deal of persecution against the early Baha'is in that environment. So the founder of the Baha'i Faith, Baha'u'llah, he was exiled many times by the Persian governments and then the Ottoman governments, and eventually was sent to Akka, which is now in Israel. So that's where the Baha'i World Center is at the moment. It's in Israel, and that's where the remains of Baha'u'llah rest.
So you also have a connection to the Holy Land, just like the Christians and the Muslims and the Jews.
Yes.
That region.
Absolutely. It's our holy land as well. And that spiritual connection between the Christians and Jews and Muslims is a very important and special connection with the faith.
Mm-hmm. And so you're one of the coordinators of the Office of Public Affairs of your faith. Can you tell us more about the structure of the Baha'i organization? You just mentioned the main center is in Israel, but can you tell us a little bit more?
Sure. So in each country, there's a national spiritual assembly, and this is made up of 9 members who are elected from all of the Baha'is in that country. And it's an election which is quite different from what we think of. It's done in a way that's anonymous. There's no electioneering allowed whatsoever. So people have to consider all of the members of the Baha'i community in that country and think about their spiritual qualities and their service to their communities. And then they anonymously write down the 9 members which they feel will be most suited suited to guide the affairs of the community. And the nine members who receive the most votes, they become the National Spiritual Assembly, which governs the affairs of the Baha'i community in that country. So we have one in New Zealand, and in local communities we have local spiritual assemblies, which have the same election process at a local level. So throughout New Zealand, there is about 34 local spiritual assemblies and Baha'i communities. And the Office of Public Affairs, which you mentioned, I'm a coordinator for. We're an agency of the National Spiritual Assembly of the Baha'is of New Zealand. So there's equivalents in different countries around the world. And essentially, the office's role is to represent the Baha'i faith to other, you know, government bodies or other religious groups, you know, to work in partnership on in common goals, working towards social good. You know, sometimes we collaborate on conversations in interfaith spaces or causes which are very important, such as elimination of racial prejudice. We have a speech award competition that happens every year, and it's all these young people from high school that enter, you know, and share their ideas about racial prejudice and how we can build racial unity. So the Office of Public Affairs is essentially sort of the outward facing to government and community and the wider community and religious bodies that we represent for the National Spiritual Assembly.
And so there are many communities, Baha'i communities, all over the world. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. It's the second most widespread religion in the world after Christianity.
Oh,
and,
really?
In almost every country, you'll find Baha'is. Yes. So very, very diverse and very widespread religion. Yeah.
And do you work together internationally also with the other Baha'i communities? Because you described the system of how to elect somebody from on a national point of view, but are you connected very well with other countries?
Yes, well, particularly as you mentioned, you know, the Baha'i World Center is in Israel, in Haifa, and we also have the international governing body of the Baha'i community, the Universal House of Justice, which is elected from the National Spiritual Assembly members. They elect every 4 years the Universal House of Justice. And at the Baha'i World Center, there are other agencies and institutions. So, for example, we have a Baha'i International Community body which works with the United Nations. We have an Office for Public Discourse, which is concerned about, you know, having topics of conversation in our community, gender equality, racial unity. And then we also have offices which are more concerned with development activities. So there's a whole variety, but we definitely have a lot of connections. So there's only one Baha'i faith. We have a covenant. There's no sects and there's no division within the Baha'i community. That's one of the most important tenets of the Baha'i faith, is this: we must obviously represent the unity we talk about. We must have that ourselves first. So we're very much connected to the international Baha'i community through the Baha'i World Center.
Yeah. Do you also have a language that most people speak, or that they have an idea of? Are the writings from the founder, are they translated in many different languages from one language, or is it something that, you know, with Christianity, we have four sacred languages. The Muslims have one sacred language. The Jews have a sacred language. Do you also have a kind of sacred language?
I wouldn't say that we do in the same way. Most of the writings of Baha'u'llah and the founder of the Baha'i faith are in Persian or Arabic, but they're translated into every language that you can imagine, you know, for all the Baha'is. One of the things about the Baha'i faith is that everything we do is open to everybody as well. So really being able to read and investigate and understand what the Baha'i faith for each person themselves in their own mother tongue is a very important part of the Baha'i faith. So they're translated into all different languages.
I saw on the website that you had some translations of quotes in Maori, and I was quite impressed.
Yes, we have the Baha'i prayer book translated into Te Reo, and we have some other books, Baha'u'llah and the New Era. And it's something which, you know, nationally we're really working very hard to try and represent the special, you know, the tangata whenua of New Zealand and their special place and role, and to be able to have as much as we can bilingually. You know, hopefully in the future everything will be bilingually, you know, but we're working as hard as we can to get things translated into Te Reo.
That's wonderful, Nina. So for those of you who've just tuned in, you're listening to Muffin Talk with Beate. If you miss any of our programs, please check out the website at www.studyjoy.nz, or in this specific case, also www.rdc.org.nz, the website of the Religious Diversity Center. My guest today is Nina Tu'i. She is the coordinator at the Office of Public Affairs of the Baha'i Faith here in Auckland, and we're talking about the Baha'i faith and the Baha'i community. As I said in the beginning of the interview, last week started the Baha'i New Year. Why do you start your New Year in March?
Yes, so it seems a bit odd for us in the Gregorian year, doesn't it? But in fact, for many people in the world, this the vernal equinox or the spring equinox is the time of New Year. So for Iran, you know, Persia, it's also the New Year celebration. As Baha'is, we have a calendar. So we have the Badi calendar, which consists of 19 months, and each month has 19 days. And there's a few extra days in there, which we call Ayamiha, and have time of celebration and charity and food in that Ayamiha period. And then we have the last month of the year is a fasting month, and that's 19 days where we abstain from food and drink from sunrise to sunset. And then on the very last day, of course, of that month is Nowruz, or New Day, the Baha'i New Year, which is usually about the 20th or 21st of March. Yeah, so that was our New Year celebration, which we had just a few days ago.
So 19 seems to be a very special number. And if you add the 1 and the 9, then you have the 20th, and that leads you to equinox.
Yes, yes, there's a lot of 9 is a very important number in the Baha'i faith as well. You know, we have the symbol of the Baha'i faith as a 9-pointed star.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. And regarding the fasting, how do you practice your fasting? I know that from the Christian tradition, we fast, but we are exempt on Sundays. The Muslims are exempt at nighttime. Do you also have exemptions like this in the Baha'i faith?
Yes. So as I mentioned, it's one Baha'i month that we fast for, 19 days. And fasting is for those who are between the ages of 15 and 70, who are of good health and are able to. So there are many people who, myself, for example, I haven't fasted the last couple of years because I've either been pregnant or nursing. So, you know, those are exemptions, or others who are doing hard physical labor, or those who are ill, you know. So there's many reasons why some people cannot fast. But the Baha'i fast, it's a material representation of a spiritual fast, of us turning towards God and turning towards the spiritual things, and, you know, reflecting on prayer and more time for prayer and meditation. So the material part is almost, in my opinion, the lesser part, you know, that it's a period where we are devoting ourselves to considering, you know, things of the spirit and reflecting on God, and you know, trying to be a little more detached, shall we say, from material things. But it's from sunrise to sunset. So after sunset and before sunrise, we eat and drink. And certainly, you know, keeping your health up is very important. And it's only something that we do in the spirit of service and sacrifice, if we're able to physically.
Yeah, but everybody is asked to think about the faith and about spiritual things in general, because that doesn't have any impact on your physical ability.
It's a special time. It's a time of renewal, exactly. It's a time of us, you know, putting aside material things and thinking about the things of the spirit and reflecting on our own spiritual journey and having more time for prayer and meditation. And, you know, we see it as a very important, potent time of the year when we can draw on these spiritual forces.
How many times do you have fasting during the year?
Just
19
month.
Days.
Yes, so it's from, I think, the 2nd of March to the 20th of March.
Okay. And you mentioned already a little bit about education and the different work that you're doing. When I looked at the Baha'i website, I saw a quote from Abdul Baha saying that the progress of the world of humanity depends upon knowledge and its decline is due to ignorance. So in which way is the Baha'i community involved in education and in gaining knowledge?
Yes, education is a huge part of the Baha'i teachings. And in fact, you know, we're told from the writings of Baha'u'llah that, you know, man is like a mine rich in gems. We have all these, you know, beautiful talents and abilities and skills within us, but it's education that can reveal those. That's how these things are brought out from each individual person. So our own talents and capacities, as well as the talents and capacities of the collective, you know, communities and national countries, are brought out from an education system. So in terms of the Baha'i community, there's a lot of different lenses, I think. You know, we recognize that there's material education, but there's also spiritual education, and we cannot have one without the other. You know, we must have both of these education processes advancing simultaneously, and they're so interconnected. As a community, we offer educational programs to the communities, our friends and family in which we live, which are focused on this premise, on the development of material and spiritual education, on developing the capacities of the individual to be able to serve their community, to be able to contribute to the advancement of our civilization, you know, moving towards material and spiritual well-being. So we have programs for children, which, you know, develop these spiritual qualities, patience, cooperation, love, service to others, also qualities of prayerfulness and, you know, self-sacrifice and service is very essential. And then we have programs for young people we call June Youth between the ages of 12 to 15, which is developing their literacy and numeracy and, you know, critical thinking skills, but at the same time are about them thinking about how they can serve their community and develop these spiritual qualities, walk a path where they are looking for confirmations of God and thinking about making the right decisions and being morally empowered. And then we also have programs for youth and adults, which again is really focusing on the spiritual side of education. But in terms of the material side of education, you know, the Baha'i Faith talks about how mothers are the first educator and the very important role of mothers in families and communities, because they are the first educators of humanity, essentially, of all children, you know, and how we then, you know, must really support young people to be able to go into formal education and receive that material education. So there's a whole mix of things in terms of the education space, but it's something which is very embedded into the teachings of the Baha'i Faith, essentially around this idea of this developing material and spiritual civilization, you know, that we must be empowered, and education is the tool by which we can do this.
And I like the way that you described that you open the minds of children and young people and adults, anybody to be educated, which when you think of the Latin root, it's educere, to lead out of the darkness or to lead out of somewhere. So that is a really wonderful approach. And I've also met a lot of Baha'i people in interfaith work. Is there a special commitment? Is there something that's part of the education that you educate children also about other faiths?
Yes, I suppose, you know, because as Baha'is, we believe that all religions are, you know, come from God, that they're teachings of God, and that they are, you know, people have different ways of worshipping God. And so it's very important for us to teach young people that we must love and respect people from different religious backgrounds. And this is the only way we can build unity, you know, is by learning how we can not tolerate each other, but love each other and serve together and work together. And so, yeah, understanding different backgrounds and understanding different religions is a very important aspect, yes.
Mm. And can you tell us something about your places of worship? Because I haven't seen any place of worship here in New Zealand. Is there any place of worship in New Zealand?
Well, I would say yes and no, because for Baha'is, you know, we pray every day. We have our own, you know, prayers morning and evening, and obligatory prayers as well. And people fit that into their lives the way that they can. And a very important aspect of what we are doing as Baha'is is also we host devotional meetings or prayer gatherings in our homes or in public spaces. And these are spaces by which people from different diverse backgrounds can come together and reflect on things of the spirit, reflect on God, reflect on spiritual qualities, and have a space where they can pray and meditate. And these are in many Baha'is' homes, many friends' homes, many community halls. And there are some Baha'i centres in New Zealand as well. And of course, these are spaces which Baha'is use for gatherings, for prayer and worship and other activities of the Baha'i faith. But around the world, we also have temples. So we have temples for each continent. So there's one in Sydney and there's one in Samoa, if you ever make it to Apia. These are open for everyone. They're open for all people of all backgrounds to come essentially during daylight hours and come and read and meditate and reflect in these places of worship. But in New Zealand, we don't have a temple at the moment. So I guess our places of worship are everywhere and anywhere.
Oh, that's wonderful. And so how do these places, does a temple look like? If we see a temple, how can we see that it's a Baha'i temple?
One of the most significant features of the Baha'i temples, they all have nine sides. And these
not
represent...
19.
No, yeah, that would be a big temple. Nine sides. And they are often designed in an architectural way that represents the local community. So I used to live in Samoa, and the temple there, it has similarities to the traditional whale and, you know, a very openness. But they are a place, they have nine sides, and the nine sides represent the openness to all religions, you know, that they are welcome places for all people to be able to come to and come and worship and pray. And there are usually once a week sort of a service, I suppose you would say, where there's a program which people can come and listen to. But then the rest of the week is essentially a time for quiet reflection inside the temple, yeah. But they have beautiful gardens around them, and that they're lovely.
So you have gardens, and so is that where people connect to nature and to God through the gardens, to the beauty?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, yes. You know, they're places of great beauty, and the not only the building themselves, but also the gardens around them are places for reflection and prayer, and you know, they're very very, very widely visited in India, in New Delhi. There's a temple that's the shape of a lotus flower with these reflective pools around it. And they have, you know, more visitors than the Taj Mahal go to the lotus temple.
Really?
So there's just thousands and thousands of visitors every day that go to these, some of these temples. So they really are places of reflection and prayer, and they're amazing places to visit.
And so so you just can go anytime you like. You can go to the temple, and when you say there's no service per se, but people pray them, there might be some events or some led prayer, or how does it work?
Sometimes, yeah. So the one I'm most familiar with of where I lived was in Apia, and we would have every Sunday a program. So there would be readings around a particular theme. It might be oneness of humanity, or love for humanity, or racial unity. And there'll be a series of quotes from the Baha'i writings, and also other holy books from the Bible, from the Quran, from different religious holy texts. And then there would be songs as well. So there was a choir, really, very moving experience. And this would be every Sunday. And then during the week, there would sometimes, if there was a Baha'i holy day, there would be a program. But if you went during the week and you were just visiting, it's a place of quiet reflection. So people do not read aloud. They just have quiet prayers to themselves. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Nina, for all this information. I think that the listeners and I, we have learned a lot about the Baha'i faith. Thank you very much.
And thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. And I hope that you come again when we have another topic on a special feast day or something from the Baha'i faith. And I think that there's a lot to learn about the Baha'i faith. Thank you very much. And one note from Titi Ponam, who study and joy. So we have now a break at the moment for events, but on Saturday, 22nd of May, we will have the event at the St. Mark's Coptic Orthodox Church in Birkdale, Auckland's North Shore, which we had to postpone due to lockdown. And this evening will include a presentation by Nick Burt on rock-hewn churches in Ethiopia, and of course the visit to the beautiful Coptic Orthodox Church. That will be on Saturday the 22nd of May from 7 to 9 p.m. And more events are available at www.studyjoy.nz, and of course have a look at the new website of the Religious Diversity Center at www.rdc.org.nz. Kia kaha, keep safe, and thank you so much, Nina, for having taken the time to come to the Zoom.
Thank you. I'm saying, because this day is the day for the brand.
And can you hear the call of the prophets who see? Oh, where justice and mercy and peace are the songs in our heart. The joy that this day is the day for a brand new start. We're singing, this is the day when the hope was called. This is the day. Of love we meet for the